Hashem. And Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Ani Hashem. Now what's interesting about the beginning of this week's parasha and in general about Moshe Rabbeinu over here is, Moshe Rabbeinu basically here we're first getting to understand, not us, but Moshe Rabbeinu is his first introduction with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The whole 7 days he's saying to Hashem, I don't want to go. And finally Hashem sends him and he says, they're not going to believe me. And he says, don't worry, go. And he goes and he gets let down. Why? Instead of making matters better, he makes matters worse. So he comes back to Hashem and he says, why'd you send me? Why'd you make it bad for the people? He's all upset at Hashem. And of course, on Moshe Rabbeinu's level, then on our level, we get upset. That's how Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Hashem in his way. And Hashem, because of that, says to him, in last week's parasha, he says, the last pasuk in last week's parasha is, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Al tesira, now you're going to see. Asher eser leparo, where I'm going to do the paro. Now you're going to see. But now you're going to see, I'm going to take out the Jewish people, Biyad Chazav v'yishalchem, I'll drive them out with a very strong hand, Biyad Chazav v'yigarashem ha'arsa, he'll literally kick them out of Eretz Mitzrayim. So, first of all, there's a very hidden message over here. The hidden message over here, Hashem is saying to Moshe, now you're going to see, but because you're complaining, and you don't trust me, I'm using the word, you don't trust me, so you're not going to see in the milchama of eventually entering Eretz Yisrael. It's really the first place where Moshe Rabbeinu is hinted already, you're not going to enter Eretz Yisrael. When you ask so many questions, you're not going to enter Eretz Yisrael. My Rebbe Rav Gussman said over a story once, I didn't hear it directly from him, maybe I didn't and I don't remember, but Rav Gussman said there was a man in Vilna, my Rebbe lived in Vilna, and the Gadol HaDor then was Rav Chaim Moshe Grzhensky. And there was a man in Vilna who used to always walk over to Rav Chaim Moshe Grzhensky and say, why does Hashem do this? Why does Hashem do this? Now, by the way, he was saying this before World War II broke out. So how bad could things been? The man would only have to know later on. But he would say, why did Hashem do this? Why did Hashem do this? And every time he would say it to Chaim Moshe Grzhensky, he would tell him, you don't want to know why. You don't want to know why. And this was going on week after week after week. And finally, Chaim Moshe Grzhensky said to him, if you really want to know, I guess you're going to have to find out. And soon afterwards, he died. That's how we found out why Hashem did whatever he had to do. Okay? Moshe Rabbeinu is coming and he's saying, why'd you do this? Why'd you do this? Hashem said, now you're going to see, you're going to see how I take them out of Egypt. But because you're complaining, you're not understanding my ways, you're not going to be zeichet to other things. Now, of course, this is on a very, very high level. Moshe Rabbeinu was on a very high level. Even without understanding him, he was on a very high level. But I guess on our level, we have to also understand, not everything we're able to understand. In fact, a friend of mine told me, he said, if you think that Hashem's mind works like your mind, then what kind of Hashem is he after all? Okay? In other words, if you get the point that Hashem is way, way above, then obviously you can't understand it. If you think you could, then he's not really Hashem. So this is the first message. The beginning of our introduction to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Moshe is Moshe himself being the biggest leader of Am Yisrael. At first, also, he didn't really fit exactly know what was going on. And here, now, in this week's parasha, Hashem is already molding him and telling him, putting him, kiviyacho. And I don't know how to say these words, and I really don't even know the olam over here will understand my hesitation and what I'm saying. But we really cannot speak chas v'chalila close to understanding Moshe Rabbeinu at all. But just to get a little understanding, the pasuk begins with "Vayidaber lekim al Moshe v'yomer elav ani Hashem, I am Hashem." Now, what does this mean? Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. There's an interesting Targum Yerushalmi. Targum Yerushalmi brings down "Ani Hashem, I'm the same Hashem who you saw in this net." What was the purpose that Hashem appeared the first time to Moshe Rabbeinu in this net? So Rashi, I think, brings down Hashem is showing Moshe Rabbeinu that this net is the bush. A bush has no fruit to it, and it's burning. It's totally consumed. It's showing the concept, what the pasuk says, "Ima anachi b'tzara," that Kadosh Baruch Hu is with the Jews in any pain that they have. Even though the Jew is like the snat, is like the burning bush, everything is burning around him. The whole world is in flames, and Hashem appears in the flames. And Hashem is showing, "I am there." When Hashem is talking to Moshe and saying to Moshe that, you know, you're complaining, I'm the same Hashem who's with the Jews always through their tzaros, always through their sorrows. And since I'm with the Jews always through the sorrows, how could you even expect that I'm doing something cruel? Everything I do is pure chesed. Now, I was once in a court. It was a Jewish judge here in Israel, a Jewish American judge, and a Jewish American frum judge. So, and people told me, before I went to the court case, people told me, oh, this guy's a tzaddik. This guy's a tzaddik. You're lucky, because if you get another judge, what was I doing? I built something without a permit. So they gave me a summons and took me to court. So they said, you got this judge, you're very lucky, because another judge, they could slap you with 60, 70,000 shekels. Okay, so I walked into him and I pleaded my case and he spoke. And then he gave me, I think it was a knas, a fine, 2 or 3,000 shekels, whatever. So I said, like the usual Jewish reaction, so much, you know? So he said, Ta'aminli, you should believe me, you gotta weigh big gadol. You gotta weigh big. You gotta weigh big. Okay? So you have to understand, whenever you're doing something and chas v'chud or something bad happens, you gotta realize you gotta weigh big gadol. Hashem does everything is chesed, pure, pure chesed. So whatever Hashem does, you have complaints, you don't even know what I'm doing. Everything is pure, you're getting away big gadol, you're getting away with big. And that's the idea, the first understanding of Hashem is telling Moshe, whatever I do, you should know it comes from mercy. It doesn't come from any chas v'chalila, from anger, from revenge. Those concepts don't exist with the Jewish people with Hashem. Everything is with rachamim, ani Hashem. And then the pasuk says, "Ve'eber l'Avron l'Yitzchak v'Yaakov v'kel shaka yishmi Hashem v'nedati lehem." Rashi says something over here which is really pure Kabbalah, which we don't understand. But again, a little bit, just to get a little feeling. Rashi says that, what does it mean? And Ve'eber l'Avois v'kel shakai. Rashi says, I promise them that I'll do a lot of good with the name of Kael Shakai. And my real name, the name of Yudkei Vavkei, I did not tell them. It wasn't mean Hashem did not say the real name of Yudkei Vavkei. Basically, the Ramban explains there's two types of conducts Hashem conducts his world. One way he conducts his world through Teva, through natural means, and that is alluded in the name Shakai, Shin, and Dalet, and Yud, which actually comes from the abbreviation of a phrase, Sha'omar La'ilam Oidai. Hashem said his world enough. He said for the world to expand, to grow. The world was like nothing, and Hashem made from nothing something, and from that something he made a bigger thing, and a bigger, and a bigger. And then he said for that thing totally expand, and it started to expand. Mm-hmm. It's expanding, 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 until Hashem said, enough, die, till here. And that's what we have the world. The world was created, it would have gone on, it would be continually growing, but Hashem said enough. That is how Hashem created the world, Shakai. So Shakai, the conduct of Shakai is the conduct of nature. How Hashem conducts miracles through nature. A person wakes up in the morning, he breathes, he looks, he talks, he walks. Rav Chesed Abramsky was a very big tzaddik and a very big Talmid Chacham. Sometimes before he would give a shiur, he would say, I want to show everybody an open miracle. He says, watch. And everybody's looking at him and he goes, watch. Now we'll begin the Gemara. It's an open miracle. I could use my hand. Open miracle. Okay? So that's the word Shakai. Shakai is nature. Nature, all natural means Hashem spoke with the others. He didn't really show them too many supernatural miracles. And now Hashem is introducing to the Jewish people, because they are Jewish people, he's introducing the concepts of miracles above nature. That's a Yudkei Vavkei, that Hashem is able to do miracles even above nature. And the reason why maybe we don't see too many miracles today is maybe because our emunah is not that strong. If we had stronger emunah, chances are we would see bigger miracles. What happens when you go to a tzaddik, and a tzaddik gives you a bracha, if it was a tzaddik, he is on that level. He's on that level of above nature. So he sees things above nature, he could give you the bracha because his emunah is very strong. But this is what Hashem is saying to Moshe, now I'm going to appear with the name of Yudkei Vavkei that I'm going to make and I'm going to start making miracles. So the parasha goes further, and the parasha says that Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to the Jewish people and they don't listen to him, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know, I'm a ras v'sayim, I have a lisp, because he was burnt by the coals, his tongue was burnt, his lip was burnt, and he used to mumble when he would talk, he wouldn't talk straight. Okay? So the Alter von Kelm was a very big Baal Musar, one of the big master of Musars. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu have to be the leader with a lisp? Maybe the word lisp is not the right word. He would mumble, he had some defect in his talk. Why was it so? Why did Hashem have to make such a leader? And among the answers that he gives is that Hashem wants to show that whoever I send as a messenger to do my will, he doesn't have to be a great orator, doesn't have to have a very good power of speech, he doesn't have to be very, very charismatic. If Hashem wants anybody to do his job, even the smallest person to do his job, he doesn't have to do, doesn't have to be anything.
Was it a Moshe's choice to have the list?
Why?
Because of the measures where he burned his list, he could have done tshuva for it.
Do tshuva?
No, it's not. It didn't come from Hashem.
I understand. How did he have a choice? He was a baby. He wanted to take the rock, the diamond, and the mouth pushed his hand, and he took the coals and put it in his mouth.
So it was him.
Who was him?
Moshe.
But the mouth pushed his hand. The mouth pushed his hand to his mouth. Okay? But that's the first thing. You don't have to do, you don't have to be anything. You're the messenger, you gotta do it, and you have to do it. And it reminds me of a very interesting story with the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim is very much into going out. You have to ask the rabbi if you're on the right level. But the story of the Chafetz Chaim is the Chafetz Chaim would go out and say, people have to go out and teach Torah, even if they're not worthy. They're not on the right level, because in today's generation, everybody has to try as much as possible to try to save Judaism. And he said a story which was, I guess, in World War I. He said in World War I, at the beginning of the war, you had colonels and generals who were in their 30s and their 40s, and you had the sergeants who were in their 20s. At the end of the war, World War I that is, at the end of the war, you had colonels and generals who were like in their late 20s, and you had sergeants who were 17 and 18, and who was a regular soldier, a 14 and 15-year-old boy was a regular soldier. And the reason is because at the beginning of the war, they had a lot of soldiers, so you were able to have generals who were 40 and 30 and up. But as the war continued 4 years later, everybody got killed out, so who became the new leaders? You had to have 20-year-olds as generals and then 17-year-olds as sergeants. So he said in olden times, Jewish people had great rabbis, great Rosh Hashivas, great gedolim, tzaddikim. So that's what you have, but today you don't have it. So everybody should be a general. Everybody has to go out and be makarif. And then he gave an example. And the example he said was, there was a fool in the city, and he asked for some water. A person asked for some water. So the fool goes, takes muddy water from the floor, and picks it up and gives him to drink. He says, is this the water you give me? I can't drink it, it's full of mud. So the fool says, okay, sorry, and he gives him good water. A couple of days later, a huge fire breaks out, and the place is burning down, and the fool is standing there like this. He says, why don't you do something about it? He says, what should I do? He says, there's plenty of water, take water and throw it on the flames. So the fool says, you told me it's muddy water. It's muddy water, what do you want from me? It's not clean water. He says, you fool, that's why he was a fool. He says, when it comes to drinking, when you have to drink, so you have to have good water. But to put out a fire, then you've got to take any water you find. No matter how bad the water is, you've got to put out a fire. So the Chafetz Chaim, if we want to be particular with which big gedolim, big tzaddikim, big who knows what, then of course, then you get clean, pure water. But in today's generation, there's a fire burning, and whatever you could do to take it out, everybody has to pitch in and take out the fire. So this is also the concept of Aras V'Sayim. Hashem is showing Moshe Rabbeinu to take out the Jewish people. Somebody has to take them out. It doesn't matter where you personally are holding in life, what level you are. But if you've got to do what you have to do, you've got to do it. And I got to tell you, I felt a little bad. Why am I telling you I feel bad? I shouldn't tell you. But I'm telling you. I was in Russia, and somebody introduced me to somebody else. He told me this guy became religious 2 years ago. This is about 10 years ago. He became religious 2 years ago. How much can a person already know in 2 years? Now, if you guys were not religious 2 years ago, you still knew what Shabbos was, you went to a day school. 2 years ago in Russia means he had no bris, he didn't know what Avram Yisrael Yaakov were, he never heard Shema before. He doesn't know what Jewish means, he doesn't know what the Chalav means. So 2 years in being religious, 2 years, means he started putting on fill-in, hearing about fill-in, making a bris, knowing what a bris is, Shema Yisrael for the first time. It's 2 years, which is really two years. Anyway, he saw back in his city there was no Judaism, so he opened up a school for 400 kids and he teaches them how to pray. 2 years, that's all he's for, 2 years. But he sees, nobody knows anything, so he has to teach them. So anyway, this is the idea that I asked for science. So, okay, we go further, and later on the parasha it says, Hashem comes to Moshe and says, You should know I'm going to give matters to Paroi, and Paroi is not going to listen to you. Paroi is not going to listen to you, and give him the matters anyway. And there's a tremendous Rambam over here. It's a very, very awesome Rambam. Very, very awesome Rambam. Rambam says, he speaks about the level of punishments that a person could deserve and withstand. He doesn't go into detail exactly what sin, what punishment you get for what sin. He doesn't go into detail as far as that's concerned. And he doesn't go into detail as far as which sin the Torah prescribes, which punishment. He speaks about punishments that you get in this world and punishments that a person can get in the next world. So Rambam discusses, I'm not going to read it inside, I'm just going to skim through it. Rambam is a parashishi, Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam brings down, and he says, there are different levels of sinners. There could be a person who does a sin, and this sin that a person does, nobody told them to do this sin. That's how the Rambam begins. Everybody has total free will. It's a very, very, again, very, very important Rambam, an awesome Rambam, that nobody could blame anybody for the way he came out. He can't blame his friends, he can't blame his family, he can't blame his siblings. Everybody was created, they had their own mind, and they could do their own decisions. That's how the Rambam begins. And therefore, when somebody sins, the Rambam says, you know, he sinned because he wanted to sin. The basic bottom line is you sin because you wanted to sin. Now sometimes, as a kid doesn't show up in school, so he comes to the teacher, has a whole bunch of excuses. So the teacher sometimes says, bottom line is you didn't want to come to school. That's the bottom line. That's the answer, you don't want to come. Everything else is excuses. Same thing says the Rambam. All the excuses a person could give, the bottom line is a person sins because he personally wants to sin. That's the bottom line. Everything is good, but that's the main reason. So says the Rambam, therefore only Hashem knows the right punishment to give this person. What are the punishments that Hashem gives to such a person? Some punishments, the Rambam says, Hashem punishes him in this world. How? Either physically, he gets punished physically, or he gets punished losing his money, or he gets punished with his children, or he gets all above, all the three, he gets punished. And yet, there's certain aveiros which are so severe that Hashem punishes him only in the next world. And there are other aveiros that are so severe that Hashem punishes him in the next world and in this world. This world a little bit, and the main portion is waiting for him in the next world. And then the Rambam says, there's the most severest punishment possible. Which is that? What could be the most possible severest punishment? What?
Aris.
Not getting punished.
Not being punished.
Like physically?
The Rambam lists punishments. A punishment, a person gets punished with his body, his money, his children, punishment in this world, some problems in this world, worse, punishments in the next world, worse than that, punishments in this world and the next world, and then there is even the most biggest punishment. What could be the biggest punishment? More than that?
Karis, cutting you off.
No, next world.
But that already we said. We said already, this world and the next world.
Not even preserving it.
Listen to what the Rambam says. I mean, you gotta digest what the Rambam says. The biggest punishment is, I'm gonna read to you what he says. And yet there are certain times that a person sins such a great sin, such a tremendous sin, that no punishment he's worthy of, except this punishment, which is a punishment. Hashem takes away from him the power to do tshuva. That's the biggest punishment of them all. Do you hear what he's saying?
Do
you understand well? Understand well. That means as good and or as bad, as worse a bad punishment could be, it's still connected to Hashem. The reason why Hashem punishes a person is because he wants him to do tshuva. So he'll punish him even in the next world, like you said. He'll burn 3 years in Gehenna, but he serves his term, and again he has a good relationship with Hashem. But sometimes Hashem is so upset at a person. Honestly, I don't believe today there are Jews around that have this punishment. I really don't believe. Don't cast a clue to think any of you guys. Don't think about yourself ever. No? But he's saying the worst possible is they don't give him a chance to do tshuva. And this is what Hashem said to Paro. The biggest punishment Paro got was because he was such a bad Rasha, Hashem said, I'm going to cut off from him the way of doing tshuva. And he stopped. Didn't let him do tshuva.
That's where you go.
Why do you say anything
else besides
that? Now.
Didn't he say tshuva?
What?
Far said tshuva in the water. He said nichamocha. Ve'im Hashem.
That's the other verse.
Very good. Very
so
good.
He did say tshuva, right?
Where do you see that he said nichamocha? Maybe it's true. Maybe he said that pasuk. It's possible. I can hear what you're saying. That goes according to a different medrash that we'll mention at the end. According to that medrash, maybe you have to say that it doesn't fit in with this Rambam. Maybe. Yeah. You have to say so. Because you're right. Because according to this medrash, Paro did the tshuva. Paro did the tshuva. Okay? What exactly does it mean when a guy does tshuva? I don't remember all the differences, but there's basically five differences when a Jew does tshuva and a guy does tshuva. One difference I think I remember is when a Jew does tshuva, he could go back on all his past and rectify. A guy doing tshuva is only from now to the future. Okay? That's one of the differences.
Also, when a guy does tshuva, it's because it usually, like one of the main reasons you would do it anyway, like just because you know where else to turn, so that you might as well turn together.
It's not to Hashem Shemayim. Okay.
We say that avodas are like mitzvahs, like
suyas, right?
Yeah.
I think another difference is it doesn't affect olam haba. A guy's tshuva does not affect olam haba. Only olam haba. The basic look here speaks about this.
I was thinking like when your guy's going to have death, that he won't have anywhere to turn. You know, like there's like the story that like 7 years on the death that he died from. You know, like this place.
That's tshuva. It's a tshuva. That's a tshuva. Anyway, what possibly could have a person that did such something so bad, even a Jew, that it's possible that Hashem wouldn't close the doors of Jew? What possible sin could he possibly do? So, I let your minds wander, I would imagine you think of all the three worst averis that a Jew has to die of Kiddush Hashem. Either adultery, shvichas damim, no, those things also did the Jew wrong. That's not the worst thing. Seems from the Rambam, it's a scary thing, I'm going to read it. We're learning Rambam. Rambam says the following. Hu Shachadosh Baruch Hu, this is what Hakadosh Baruch Hu said to Yeshayahu HaNavi, to Am Yisrael, here again, to Am Yisrael. The heart of the people is fat, meaning they're full of fat, full of cholesterol, and it's not penetrating, what I'm telling them. V'oz Nav Hachbeid, and the ears are heavy, they don't hear. The Ein of Hashan, they don't look. And why? They're making fun of Tamidei Chachamim, who are like angels, and they're making fun of their words. Therefore, Hashem is angry and there's no return. It seems over here that what level can a person reach that Hashem could close the doors of Shuvah is the person starts making fun of Tamidei Chachamim, makes fun of rabbis, Tamidei Chachamim, yeshivas. Whatever in that sort. Now again, it could be one of us makes fun here and there. We don't really mean it, but if you do mean it, you got to realize the Rambam is saying that's the reason why doors of tshuva could be closed. Being a diet from
so common.
What?
So common. It's probably more common than the Rambam.
You tell me yourself.
You said people get punished in this world for like a virus they do.
Right. But the punishment is not vengeance. It's
I know, it's like a comparison.
Right.
So we see though by people who were it's like thinking they never did it's like young and he suffered saras and stuff. So
what did he suffer?
I'm sure it was suffering when they found the cup in his bag, he felt bad about it. He suffered there emotionally. So
did he talk about that ever?
Did he talk about the Nasha told him? Don't worry about it. And he played along because he's told.
And really? I didn't measure.
Measure says that you know that.
No.
The whole time.
What?
The
what?
The
I don't know if I told you. No, the whole time. No, I wasn't going with that mahal. He knew the whole time and he was playing along.
Because he knew that the brother that the dream needs to be Mekayim. And Yosef said, I need to make sure that the dream is Mekayim. So he said, okay, fine. Okay.
How do you know?
I go along with it.
Interesting.
How do you know the whole so we see by itself? Yosef told them that he was really Yosef. And then he was so because he had to make sure the dream didn't
tie. It's a little hard to hear the
chakras. They don't want to cry with them. And Menichmo, he couldn't hold himself up. I hear. But I tell you, awesome marriage. There is a pasuk. in the Zaisa Bracha, it's the end before Moshe Rabbeinu is dying, he gives a bracha to each Sheva. And of course, the whole prayer is really the Ruach HaKodesh, but especially the last bracha is setting every Sheva where they belong. And one of the Pasukim that Moshe Rabbeinu blesses Binyamin is with a Pasuk which says, Bein Kaseif HaShachem, that the Shechina will lie on the shoulders of Binyamin. Why would the Shechina lie on the shoulders of Binyamin? Meaning that the Beis HaMikdash will be built on the Chedek of Binyamin. Now the Beis HaMikdash, Mitzvah Hashem, will be soon built. Most of it will be built, the Kodesh Kadashim, where the Aron HaKodesh is in the Chedek of Binyamin. Why was Binyamin Zeichet to have the Beis HaMikdash built on his shoulders, on his place? Says the Medrash, after they found the Bechet, the Gvir, all the Shvatim were angry at Binyamin, and they started beating him on his back. They were choshed with Sheva, they were choshed that he stole. So in the schus that they were beating him on his back was over that he shot the Beis HaMikdash built in his favor. So the concept of that is that even though it looks like he's getting punished for no reason, but it's in order that he should have a schus, it's Yisurim Shalahava, that eventually the Shechina will be resting on his shoulders. Okay? So I don't know, Binyamin, that's so much of a problem with Binyamin.
So we see by, I'm asking if we see by Tzadikim who never did a mirror, he never had Saras in the line?
Rashi says that. Rashi asks a question.
Just happy to
Rashi asks a question, and Rashi says in the first, these are called Yisurim Shalahava, Yisurim I love in order to give them more Schar Nalan Hava. They should have more Schar Nalan Hava. Okay? I don't know if I said this mashal, it's a Murdika mashal. I don't know if I said it, maybe I said it to you, I don't remember. There was a donkey. Did I ever say a story with a donkey? No.
No, I said it.
I think I said it. It was a story with a donkey. Somebody was riding on a donkey, and all of a sudden, he got off the donkey, and the donkey wandered a little bit and fell into a pit. And he fell into a pit, a long pit. So the donkey's down there, and he's screaming, hee haw, get me out of here. And the people are looking, the owner's looking at the donkey, says, I'm about to get a crane, lift him up. Bury him there, who needs him? So he started taking the shovels of earth, and figured, bury the donkey alive, he doesn't need him, what's he going to do with him? So the donkey is looking up, and he sees the earth coming down on him. He's getting nervous, he's getting frantic. He starts screaming and yelling, running out of here, in donkey language, of course. And the donkey is heeing and braying and screaming and yelling, and he's panicking, but he can't do anything. And after a while, he realizes they keep on dumping earth. He realizes what they're actually doing is, slowly the floor is lifting up. Boy, donkey, earth is coming down. The earth is lifting up, and he's slowly going to the top. So from his screams of screaming, stop throwing earth, now he starts screaming, more, faster, faster. So same pshat as the people. People who have chas v'chalila yisurim, we don't realize what yisurim are. If we realize it, we would say more and faster. That's the yisurim shall have. We don't feel it, because we're the donkey. The donkey in the fits. Okay, we'll go a little weiter. Yeah, so we spoke about the Rambam. Now, there's a very interesting, I want to mention the Medrash you mentioned. Who mentioned the Medrash again? Who mentioned it? Yeah. I want to mention. There's an unbelievable pasuk that seems not to mean anything, but the Medrash says your point. The pasuk says later on, when Hashem was bringing Machas Bara, the Macha Bara, I think it was, the hail. So it says over there, find the pasuk, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Paroi that Ulam Babur Zoysem Adeticha. You know why you're still alive? Babur Har Ospa Skolchi, in the order that I want to show you my strength, Ulaman Saper Shmi B'chol Aretz. I want you to spread my name throughout the world. When did Paroi spread Hashem's name throughout the world? Says the Medrash, you know when he spread Hashem's name? Moshe Rabbeinu was alluding to telling him, you should know, it's Medimachus B'chairus and you are a Bechar, and they're not going to die. And why are you not going to die? Because you're going to be a Samsuf, and you're going to be the only one who's going to survive, and you're going to end up being the king of Nineveh. And then you're going to tell everybody to be Tshuva, because you remembered what happened. So this Moshe Rabbeinu was already saying to Paroi, is going to be the whole story of Yonah. The whole story with Yonah, with the whale, Moshe Rabbeinu is already telling him. Ba'avrzosa ma'aticha, ba'avur ha'roscha eskochi, ulema'an saper shmi, that you should tell over my name in all the land. There's a very, very interesting Arachaim over here. The Arachaim brings down a certain king said, Arachaim quotes him, doesn't say which king, he says a certain king said, when Mashiach comes, I'm not going to be as stupid as Paro, and I'm going to listen. That's what I'm saying. And just to end one last little story, this Rav Volva said over once that in Italy, about 80 years ago, 1920s, King Alfonso of Italy asked the Chacham, the local Chacham of Italy from Rome, he said, I heard when your Mashiach is going to come, everybody's going to bow down to him. What is your Mashiach going to do if I don't want to remove my crown and bow down to your Mashiach? What's he going to do to me? So the Chacham said, if you're not going to want to remove your crown, you're not going to want to bow down to him, it's a siman, he's not the real Mashiach. You're going to want to do it. Okay. Questions?
First of all,
we were just talking about how Hashem, like how he made the world, and this is partially about the Makos. I was just wondering why, like, he's so much more time this, like, causing Makos than making the world.
What do you mean?
I mean, there's 10 Makos, 6 days. There's more than 6 days due to all the 10 Makos. And why was there so much more time spent destroying than?
To knock it into us that there's Hashem. We weren't around when the world was created. So another will come and tell us the world was created. Fine, maybe, maybe not. So he has to knock into us that the world was created by Hashem. The only way is by showing us I can change the whole nature. That's one of the reasons why we mentioned Yetzias Mitzrayim by Kiddush. We mentioned Yetzias Mitzrayim because we're sanctifying Shabbos. And how we know the Father Hashem created the world? Proof is, say Shem Yetzias Mitzrayim, because we went out of Egypt, so we know that Hashem created the world, he changed the whole nature.
I'm mentioning him as a, like a destroyer.
Why?
Like he's so great, he was able to destroy so much.
He's able to change nature.
But through destroying.
But through punishing. What's necessary? What's necessary?
There's no positive way of looking for him?
Took us out of Egypt, that's positive.
For us, it's still
they deserve to get punished. We deserve to get saved.
Thanks, anyone?
I have a question. Like, in the parsha also, during the plagues, through some of them, it says that Shem like made conscious separation between the Jews and the Egyptians. So again, for this plague, the Jews, like the animals aren't going to die, and for this plague, the Jews aren't going to be again with boils, or I forgot which exact ones. Does that mean that through all the other plagues?
It's not like this. Many of the learn every plague gives a difference. And Ibn Ezra thinks that the first three or four were the Jews, because it wasn't so drastic.
Then why would it say only for like specific one of that made separation? If it was separation?
It was a special thing. When the wild animals come, they need special divine providence that this one's not going to get it. And the other one with the blood, with the frogs, it wasn't dangerous. Here it was dangerous, so that's why I mentioned it.
Why wouldn't there be a separation?
What?
Because it wasn't so,
that's what Ibn Ezra says. Ibn Ezra usually likes to work a peep shot, and
right.
He understands from the pasuk it doesn't mention his question. So therefore it says, it could be that because they weren't really dangerous makas, so therefore it was on the land, the whole Nile gets bloody. Anybody
has
what to add? There's
what
to add, please.
No, I'm saying
that. It's different that the Jews got their pay. Did they go to
order? Well, that's the Medrash that says that they had order.
Right.
I'm saying the Medrash and the Ibn Ezra. It's too mouthful. I mentioned today in the Shir, which I speak to, Mike, was it I spoke to you? The Meshech Chacham brings down that Paro's palace had fresh water. Why? Because since Moshe Rabbeinu was brought up in Paro's palace, so he paid enough a high price to get water for free. That's the Meshech Chacham price.
Yeah.
Everybody had to buy water, wasn't it? But he already paid for it in advance. That's why the Pasuk says, by the Maka of Dam, he went back to his house and he didn't care. Because he had fresh hot water.
Northern and desert?
Noah?
I was learning Derech Hashem this morning, and this point came up that Hashem created the Torah, I think it was 974 years before the world was created. But how can we measure that time if there was no concept of time?
So how could you measure the time of 6 days?
No,
there's no time.
It's tough,
cool.
Time is out of darkness, right? Right.
So then how would we know that the third is this man?
The third is understood either at 70 years or as 25 years. So if you understand the concept of the generations, either 70 or 25, so you go ahead, manage 74 generations.
No, he's asking if there's no day and night.
There's no sun, there's no moon
at the time at all.
After time is created, that amount of time before. You understand what I'm saying?
After time is created.
The Gemara says, the Medrash says, besides that Gemara, the Medrash says that the world was created 2,000 years before the world was created. 2,000 years. The Torah was created 2,000 years before.
So the destiny was already there, and what are they doing? How are they having free will?
Ah, that's the Rambam's passion.
I looked at it.
So what is the answer? The Rambam doesn't answer.
Okay, question, gentlemen.
If everyone is taught the Torah, I mean, if people are taught Torah when you're a baby, and the mom has you here, then why do Goyim have this thing too?
Where does it say that only Jews taught Torah?
I don't know.
Does that put an appliance in every body to recognize there's broken? How much Torah was he taught? If he's taught at Shabbos, there's no Shabbos. He doesn't need to learn Shabbos.
He doesn't. Okay.
So maybe he was not only learned the
Shabbos. You're asking a question on his deal. Now, he said a question, it seems the guy does not have to learn Torah. So I'm saying from the Gemara doesn't make any difference. So you're saying if that's the case, then why does the guy have to learn Torah? And therefore, you're assuming, therefore, that the guy should be able to be machuy, responsible to be magaya. Or else, why is he able to learn? I hear your question. Maybe we could go a step further and say that Mirza Shem Mashiach will come in any second, so therefore, your guy will have to be chayav and higher mitzvah. So, therefore,
I'm going to
Why do we ask a different question? Why the club we have to learn Torah in our mother's stomach if anyway your mouth makes it to that? It should not be, it should just be with you. It shouldn't be hard to learn the first time.
That's also the inspiration.
Maybe so that would be an answer to your question too. If a girl you would want to be the guy, or it should be him.
So where is that brought down that it's like you're just you're relearning? What is it brought down?
So Shalom. Where is it brought down? Let's have those.
Gemara that if you say Asher three times a day, you're guaranteed a spot for all of them.
Correct.
Does that mean it's no two questions? But one, if you're scared one day, it means you're done. And two is you can do whatever you want and you're still
going to be. So number three, what does it mean if you say Asher three times to get out now?
Oh, he says
how much? Okay. So the Mohan brings down from Ben that if you have Kavana three times exactly what you're saying, so you'll be in Olam Haba. Because basically, every time you say Ashrei, you have deep concentration and everything that those words mean, automatically you'll have the Yerushalayim. If you say it three times a day, you will keep the Yerushalayim the whole day, therefore you won't come to sin, and therefore you desire to come out.
That's the power of Ashrei.
What?
I think that's the power of Ashrei then.
Yeah, because what you're saying, and you're internalizing what it says in Ashrei, so your whole day is different.
Unless any school works like that.
That's really the shot.
If I eat the head of the fish, it doesn't mean I'm having the greatest year.
Right, if you eat the head of the fish and you think you have to be a roach and you have to be ahead,
it gives you a mindset.
Obviously, you become ahead.
You say, Marsha is a man, if you think about that, the source of all for nothing.
Yeah, all the same. Everything is an idea of the
mindset.
I want to say a quick story from Amshin Rebbe, that's what I hear, and it's not far from the truth, even if it's not true. It takes him 20 minutes to make a bracha. So he asked him, what takes us so long? And he said, if you knew who you're talking to, and who you are, and what you're saying, you will take it 20 minutes to.
Should we ask doesn't know who's talking to?
Yeah. Hold on. It takes another 20 minutes, takes a Yosha 1 second.
Yeah.
I saw Moshe find some that solved out, which my answer is, it happens very fast. Okay.
Wow. When did God create like the planets and the rest of the universe and everything?
When did he create it?
Before or after the earth?
Before or after the earth? Wednesday. Well, it was the fourth day. That's the stars.
Wednesday's trip, you know.
Wednesday's trip? Well, you can take some room to be this, but you know.
Okay, that's it.
Jessica,
one last question.
Yeah, how did Hashem speak to Moses? Was it just simply with the words, or was it like visions involved?
I don't know.
You don't know?
You can answer that question. When he spoke to Mount Sinai, how did he speak with him in a vision? It says, "Panim el panim," like a friend speaks with his friend. What does that exactly mean?
But Hashem's above, it's above words. So words are a physical thing. You know, using your mind to speak. Well, no, not that.
I don't know.
We're different. But I only answer that question because the only one who talks to Hashem is dead. You know?
Okay. I don't know. Okay.
This is great. This
is the best way to end total. Thank you.